Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Rob Prince, host of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, coming at you from the golden heart of Alaska, Fairbanks, and this is OPP.
God bless everybody, and welcome back to another episode of OPP. Other People's Podcast, America's number one podcast discovery platform that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is Robert Prince, host of the amazing podcast, Dark Winter Night, True Stories from Alaska. On this amazing show, Robert uncovers true Alaskan stories told by the Alaskans who experienced them. In this episode, Rob chats about what life is like in Alaska, we get his podcaster's picks, and of course, we get into his dope show, Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska. So, without further ado, allow me to introduce you to Robert Prince. There we go, my man. Yo, Rob, what up, dog? How's everything going, bro?
It is going really good. Yeah, we, with the sun starting to come back up here, it gets pretty dark, you know, in the around the Christmas time. That's you know, the winter solstice, so the sun's coming back. We've had a pretty warm winter, and everything's coming up daisies right now.
Yeah,
for me.
Yes.
How are you doing?
So, I mean, first, man, I can't complain, man. You know, all things considered, what's going on in the world right now? Like, we here, yeah. We living. I'm talking to Rob Prince right now, like. You know, life is good, big dog.
Awesome.
So one thing I want to touch on that you just brought up was the fact you're from Michigan, mm-hmm. and now you're living in Alaska. So you definitely got a thing for climates.
I love climates, definitely.
You love climates, Rob.
I like snow. Let's just say that. I like snow.
You like snow. I mean, that's for sure. So how did you end up making the move from Michigan to Alaska?
I finished a master's degree at Michigan State University and wanted to teach, and I had a daughter who was 1 year old, and, you know, we thought, hey, if we're going to do something wild, it was basically between Alaska and Ohio. Those are my two best job leads. And so we thought, you know, she's 1 year old. She's, you know, she's too young to be mad at us for doing this and taking her so far away from family. So we thought, we'll just have a little adventure, come up here for about 5 years, and then go on and do something else. And what we didn't realize is that like 90% of the people here all had that same plan, and then it gets its claws into you up here and you can't leave. And you try to leave. We have a term called Fairbanks yo-yos, people who left and then came back because they missed it too bad. That happened to us too. We had to go back to Michigan for a family emergency, and I love Michigan, but I was not like happy with the situation there and came back. And so I've been here basically 15 years now. So,
wow.
Yeah, watch out. It gets its claws into you.
All right, so hold on now. Tell me, being that you're from the mainland, you're from the American heartland of Michigan.
Lower 48.
What's the biggest difference in the culture on the mainland of America versus in Alaska?
One of the things I like about it up here is that people are not into, like, showing off. I remember having dinner with my family and seeing a guy at a table a couple tables away who I had just met because he was doing some big grant for the journalism department where I work. So I knew the dude was a multimillionaire, and he just looked like everybody else, you know. And so what I like is, like, we're not here trying to keep up with the Joneses. We're not here trying to show off how awesome we are. Everybody's just kind of on the same plane. So that's one thing I like about it. I also like that nature makes you work a little bit harder up here. I feel like it kind of reminds you that nature is not to be messed with, and it will kill you if you're not careful. And it's almost, I kind of enjoy the challenge a little bit more. I feel like in the lower 48, everything's you know, pretty well been tamed, you know. And so life can get a little bit easy and you start worrying about things like, am I happy and did I have a good childhood? And up here, you're just like, I'm going to try not to die on the way to work today.
Yeah.
Because it's 60 below. And if I don't have a sleeping bag in my car or something and I go off the road and nobody sees, like, I will die. You know, that kind of stuff. So it's that kind of added challenge. And I think that also gives a good sense of unity. We kind of feel like we're in it together because we're almost on an island up here. We're so far away. You know, Anchorage is like a 7-hour drive, and that's the next biggest city. So there's definitely a kind of group mentality of we're in this together. And yeah, so I kind of like the priorities of people up here.
You know, we're living obviously interesting times with, you know, with COVID and everything. Like, what's the reaction been with COVID, like, up there and how folks are dealing with it?
I feel in some ways it's fairly similar to the lower 48 in terms of we got people who take it seriously and wear masks, and we have people who don't. If anybody listening ever watched Northern Exposure, it's a pretty good profile of Alaska in terms of we have, you know, really conservative people, military. We got a lot of military stuff up here. We also got some sort of crazy liberals up here too. So we got a pretty good group who all seem to be getting along okay. And so generally speaking, there's been a fair amount of controversy about things our governor's wanted to do, but one thing that he's done pretty well is trying to shut things down, and schools have remained closed. And so we're doing pretty well, and we are somewhat, we benefit from our isolation. So you're gonna have to drive through Canada if you want to get here, and there are not a lot of people. That's Canada was like really not excited about allowing Americans through Canada during all of this, and otherwise you're gonna have to fly. So we have better control over who comes and goes. But you know, we've still been hit, and I know people who have gotten sick. I don't know anyone up here who has died, but I know I have one friend in the lower 48 who's died from it. So I'm just hunkering down. It's been a great excuse to not do things with people, honestly.
Exactly. It's like, I like your ass nowhere.
Sorry, can't have coffee with you. Scared of the COVID.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I'm from the lower 48. And so kind of like I've never been to Alaska. So I'm sure a lot of Americans in the 48 have kind of maybe the same views of Alaska like I do. Like, I think, damn, it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I think of Sarah Palin.
Yep, good.
Like, she comes to mind.
Yeah.
And maybe like bears or
yeah.
something like that. That,
yeah.
that comes to mind. What are some other misconceptions that people have about Alaska, being that you're from the lower 48
mm-hmm.
and have lived there for over 15 years?
Yeah. Well, and let me first off say, you know, thanks for bringing that up, because that's why I started the podcast, was so that we could share the real Alaska with the lower 48, what it's really like. Now, we are sharing kind of the more dramatic stuff about the, you know, getting chased by bears and near death experiences, but we also, almost all of us have, whether we not wanted to or not, have had some pretty insane near death experiences up here. So I think some of the misconceptions, probably that we're less modernized than people might think. You know, we have the internet. We have like a movie theater. And it also kind of depends too on what, you know, Alaska, one thing I think people don't understand, because Alaska always gets jammed down to the bottom corner of the Pacific on maps and makes it look like about the size of, I don't know, maybe Colorado or something. Alaska's like as big as like at least half the United States. It's huge.
It's so the largest state.
Oh, it's, if you cut it in half, Texas would be the third largest state.
Wow.
You know,
no,
that's
I did
how
not
big
know that.
We are. Yeah, so we love to rub that in with Texas, because we're more than double the size of Texas. So you got to think huge. You got to think pretty spread out. Anchorage is very much, I would say, like a lower 48 city. And then Fairbanks is kind of this, like, you know, cousin of Anchorage that they sort of see us as, like, a developing nation or something like that. So we're relatively small. I believe we have about 80,000 people if you count the whole area. But we got the box stores. We got a fair amount of fast food. But it is a little bit weird. We don't have a Burger King. So if you want Burger King, you actually have to go onto the military base where there's a Burger King, which I've done a couple times. So it's just kind of weird, some of those elements to it. But yeah, there's no igloos. It doesn't get cold anymore. It used to, but we are really seeing things change up here fast. I mean, it got to 60 below one time, maybe 10 years ago in January. And we've since then, you know, so that was like the low point that I'd ever heard of up here. And then, you know, like a couple winters ago, we'd get rain in like January. So it's not as cold as it used to be. And the summer is amazing because it is basically sun all the time at about 65. So I came up here too to get away from the Michigan summers. They're just brutal. So we have a nice mild summer.
Yeah, can we touch on that for a second? Because we're kind of dressed the exact same. For you being in Alaska, for you being in LA,
yeah, right.
We're kind of dressed very similarly. But can we touch on climate a little bit? Like, how was everyone reacting to that climate change that's taking place there?
You know, it's unfortunate because a lot of us are deeply concerned about it. But at the same time, you're kind of like, I hate to complain because it's getting it's so nice. Like, I do not mind the fact that, I mean, it's 8 above here right now, which is starting to feel like a little bit cold. But I went for a walk today. No problem. So I think there's a lot of concern because we're trying to figure out how this will affect wildlife, which is a big deal up here. So you've got caribou migrating and forest fires. And some of the stuff that's really fascinating is that our glaciers are melting. And what's amazing to me is, so they're melting, putting all this, you know, fresh water into the ocean, but they're actually raising Alaska's sea elevation. So basically, I'm sorry to say, but we're like flooding you all out down there as we're kind of going up, because actually the glaciers are pushing down on Alaska. So as they melt, it's, I guess, kind of spongy, and we rise up. So, you know, and that's an element. We also are on the front lines of climate change because we have native villages along the coast who are literally washing into the ocean. And so we've had a fair amount of, you know, National Geographic and other type shows coming up here to document the fact that, you know, we've got communities that are washing into the sea as a result of this. And then the last thing that gets a little bit complicated too is that the Bering Sea and the North Pole region aren't freezing anymore. So there's some concern about more ocean traffic coming through there. And so, yeah, we're certainly very dependent, and native communities too are very dependent on wildlife and the environment behaving a certain way. And so it really has some serious impacts, serious, scary impacts. You can come up here and see. They have markers at some of the glaciers where you can see where they were in the 1960s, where they were in the 70s, where they were in the 80s, and literally walk the length of the degradation of these glaciers. And it sends a pretty clear message that things are changing fast.
Wow. Before we get into your show, I want to talk about some fun stuff.
Cool. So, yeah, because the show is boring as hell.
No, because climate change is very serious. I take it very seriously.
Yeah, let's talk about something fun. Yeah, climate change is a bummer.
But before we get into the show, though, like for people who have never been to Alaska like myself, who want to experience it, like, what are some of the things you enjoy that you feel like a first-time visitor should go check out when they come to your state?
Yeah, so a kind of typical pattern, depending on what you want to do, But some people generally fly into Anchorage and then hang around there for a while. You might go down the Kenai Peninsula to like Seward and stuff, really beautiful sort of archipelago of little islands and gorgeous, and see eagles and wildlife. And then they'll sometimes like take the train or they'll drive up here to Fairbanks, and that'll take you by Denali, which is the tallest mountain in North America. And you can go in there and check that out. And then come up to Fairbanks, see what we got going on here, and fly on out. And, you know, that's a pretty decent week plan. If week long plan, I mean. My favorite places in Alaska, though, one of them is Valdez. Alaskans love, especially people in Fairbanks, love Valdez. Valdez is gorgeous. And it's kind of almost like a rainforest. They got waterfalls all over the place and awesome sightseeing tours you can do and see glaciers calving and whales and all that sort of stuff. So Valdez is awesome. The problem is it's a little bit out of the way. You can drive there from Anchorage, but there's no like real good airport you could fly into directly. So if somebody was coming up and I'd say you got like a week and you want to fly in, do Anchorage, maybe some of the Kenai Peninsula, come up to Fairbanks, head out. If you got a little more time or want to get a little bit more off the beaten path, go to Valdez, check that out. And then if you just want, you know, adventure and sort of bragging rights, you can go up to Utqiagvik, which was formerly known as Barrow, the northernmost town in the United States, and see what a village looks like. And they have a, a airport that service, you know, a big major airlines, Alaska Airlines goes up there. And so you can get a peek at village life, which is a whole other thing that we have up here that I think people have no idea about, that we have a bunch of communities that have no road service. They just have a dirt strip and, you know, they're either by the ocean or by a river or something. And just whole communities of Alaska Native people out there living their lives in the United States in a way that's just completely foreign to most folks in the lower 48.
Well, let me tell you something. One thing I'm not seeking in Alaska is bragging rights.
Yeah. One thing you don't want to do is end up on my show. I've had plenty of moments where I'm like, please don't let this be a Dark Winter Night story.
Yeah.
Because that usually
means
like I nearly died or something, you know?
Exactly. I vacation for a peace of mind.
All right. Go to Anchorage.
Not for the bragging
rights. Kenai. Yeah. Stick to the road system.
Well, Rob, we'll take a quick break. When we get back, we're getting to your podcast, Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And yo, Rob, my man, we are back. Okay,
awesome.
So tell me, how did you first discover the medium of podcasting?
I believe that's a great question. I believe I came to it through This American Life. I was a fan of the radio show, and I feel like in some ways they were like the first podcast because they felt like the first show that had that kind of podcast format. And so I used to go through the trouble of like trying to download their episodes from their website and basically like manually do my own podcast type setup. And then, you know, I can't tell you exactly when I got started with it, but it was probably with, you know, some sort of iDevice. And I was just blown away. And I don't know if you have the same thing too, but often when I see something I just find so amazing and cool, the next thing I think of is like, how can I make something like this? And yep. Is that sort of where you ran into it too? Like you discover podcasts, you're like, these are awesome. I want to make my own.
Absolutely, my dog. So like, hold on. Give the listeners the elevator pitch of Dark Nights and what it's all about.
All right. Dark Winter Nights puts Alaskans on stage to share their true stories from Alaska with the world. If that feels a little rehearsed, because that is the elevator pitch. Yeah. So it's about sharing, having, you know, Alaskans share our real life experiences with people, with the goal of sharing what life really is like in Alaska to a world that seems really interested in it. And we're not aiming to make up drama. That's one of the issues I have with some of the reality TV shows is they have to make up a lot of stuff so that they have convenient drama for their half hour show. They can't wait for the drama to happen. And you don't need to make stuff up here. Drama just will happen to you. So eventually, you go outside enough or even stay home, drama will come to you. I mean, we got one story of a woman who was just hanging out in her house and a bear truck got stuck in her front door entry, you know?
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that.
Oh, you heard that one?
I was like,
you just mind your own business.
Yeah, it's like, look, no. No bragging rights again.
Yep.
No bragging rights over here.
So that's the deal. We want to, you know, have a share the authentic Alaska with the world.
Yeah, because so what do you want the listeners, like even for me when I write a song or I create a show or anything that I do, there's a message that I'm looking to convey to the audience. Is there an underlying mm-hmm. message that you're looking to convey with Dark Winter Nights?
You want like the theme, which I just was teaching my students about themes last week, and themes are tough. Yeah, like,
oh, they are. Indeed.
Yeah, because they're like, what does this mean in the grand scheme of human existence? And I guess I would say sort of the theme of Alaska is that, generally speaking, is that that nature is still a formidable opponent up here. That's probably the main one. Not all of our stories are about near-death experiences and encounters with bears and stuff, but tends to be where a lot of the drama comes from.
And Rob, what about for you? You know, like, what have you learned from making this show and being the host of this show that you didn't know before?
I have learned that if you don't record these stories and share them, they'll just disappear. That was one important thing. We've had a couple people pass away who were on our show, and their families ask for, you know, recordings or talk about what being on the show meant for them, because in our normal day lives, we don't, you know, just go and go over to a friend's house and start regaling them with, well, you might with friends' houses, but with strangers and whatnot. Like, if I bump into you in line at the bank, I'm not going to tell you about the time I got bluff charged by a moose or something. So that was one of the things, is the importance of keeping, of recording these stories. That in itself, I think, is very important. The other thing that was really shocking to me was how everyday Alaskans are walking around here with like harrowing, unbelievable stories of near death, etc. So after starting this program, I realized that a friend of mine at work had almost died in a plane crash, and I had no idea about that, you know, and had to be rescued by helicopter. And another friend had almost died trying to whitewater raft. And so that was really amazing to me, how so many Alaskans, just everyday normal looking Alaskans, have these incredible stories. That's been fantastic.
Well, so, Rob, we've come to a point in the show called Our Podcaster's Picks. Now, this is when I ask the guests.
I expect, like, little sound, like, is there, like, a bell or something? You need some more sound effects.
You know what? This is actually one of the first times that I've, like, actually incorporated video. Like,
oh.
Yeah.
Wait, is the video going to be, you're going to put this out there, too?
I'm going to put it on my Instagram. Like.
Wow, I didn't realize that. Let me pan to the right a little bit so you can see my spacesuit.
Gotta get that spacesuit in, Don.
Yeah, I got a tiger here. I'll show you too. But anyway, so I'm sorry I interrupted the big moment.
No. No, it's all good. So, yo, Rob, we've come to a point in the show called our Podcaster's Picks. Now, this is when I ask the guests of today's show to provide me with their top three favorite podcasts that they enjoy that we should be listening to. So, Rob, take it away.
Yeah, as a fan of your show, I'm familiar with this, and I was a little bit concerned because, and I'll keep this short. So, to answer your question, Radiolab is a must listen to. I listen to Car Talk a lot because in these days, just having a couple of guys laughing is kind of what gets me through the day sometimes. And that's just a podcast of their
Tell
old show.
Tell me a little bit more about Car Talk.
All right. So Car Talk is, if you grew up in Michigan, you know about Car Talk. But that's a public radio call-in show with Tom and Ray, Click and Clack, the Car Talk guys. And it's basically these two brothers who talk about car repair and car stuff, but they're just so funny. It's way more about a couple of brothers making fun of each other. And that show must have aired from probably at least the early 80s until, maybe 5 years ago where Tom passed away. And so that show was just on the radio forever. And now they're basically repackaging the old radio show as a podcast. And so, that's good old meat and potatoes NPR from, the 80s and 90s. And it's for folks who grew up in the Midwest, it's just kind of like it's a Saturday morning thing. You listen to Car Talk while you maybe do some chores and stuff. So, yeah, maybe that one's not as popular as I thought it was, but... the third one I would say, because I was trying to find something that's a little bit more obscure. I'm trying to learn Spanish, so I love the Duolingo podcast. In Spanish, and so they've done an incredible job of telling really fascinating stories that involve Latin American countries. That also allow you to practice your Spanish a little bit and kind of an intermediate level. And they've had some incredible ones. They had a series about this really amazing bank robbery that happened and how the robbers sort of outsmarted the police for years. And just a lot of, it's a wonderful mix of incredible story with learning a language. So if anybody out there is wanting to learn a language, you got to check out Duolingo to both learn the language, but also their podcast is a great stories and great way to practice your Spanish. But honestly, what I want to say at the end of this to make this answer even longer is one of the reason I don't have more obscure podcasts to listen to is because I've tried and I just can't find ones I like, which is why I'm really glad that, you reached out to me. Because I think shows like this are so important because there are a billion podcasts out there. And I would go online and I would seek here's a particular subject I'm interested in. What do people think is the best podcast for this? And they'd say, give me a few suggestions. I'd listen to them and I wouldn't get into any of them. And so programs like yours that help us find these gems, kind of, undiscovered gems, I think is just really important because I know there's got to be great stuff out there. There are so many.
Oh, yeah.
Are. And how do people find it? And for a long time, I thought mine was great. And I was like, how do I cut through the clutter of a billion podcasts and a billion people saying mine is great? Like, is mine really great? I don't know. So I think listening to shows like yours is really important because there's an incredible wealth of material out there, but you need people to help you filter out the stuff that's worth your time.
Totally, man. Totally. There's so many good pods out there like yours. And, mm-hmm. and Rob, I have one last question for you before we get out of here, which is, Rob, why do you podcast?
I podcast because stories are the way that we connect with each other. And they build bridges between people. And it's an incredible joy for me to be the one who gets to bring awesome stories to someone, to other people. I feel like this is just an incredible privilege. And so I podcast because I want people to feel more connected with each other and make people feel like, yeah, that we're kind of in this together and we are one species, you know. At a time where everyone's calling for unity, I think one of the things that unifies us is stories. That's what connects us.
100%, my brother. And also, too, I got one last question I'm going to throw into the mix when I edit. Is there's a live element to your show.
Right.
Like, tell me, how did, like, the live element of your show, like, come about and happen? And it's absolutely phenomenal how you put it together.
The live element was the first thing we started with because I knew that there were a billion podcasts and that my biggest struggle was going to be breaking free from the clutter. So right off the bat, I knew I need to build my local base as sort of a launching pad, that if I could get people here to see what we were doing and hopefully like it and appreciate it, that they would help to amplify our story to a larger audience. So it started off with a live event in April of 2014, and then we started airing radio episodes on the public radio station here that following September. And then we had another, we just kept doing live events two a year, and as well as the radio show would have the companion podcast. So the live event was a step toward reaching a larger podcast audience. What happened was the live events were so fun and you get such awesome feedback that we started, we've been really much more kind of focused on the live events. They're super exciting and very energizing. Whereas the podcast, you go put it out and as I've heard you talk about with other podcasters and hear nothing back. So you feel like you're just kind of throwing bottles into the ocean. And it made me realize, like it did with the people you were talking about, how important it is to let people know if you enjoy something they do, because you don't necessarily assume that they hear that. In fact, I had came up with a rule. I wouldn't check my email the day after one of our live events because inevitably I would get like one or two messages telling me what a moron I was, you know. We'd have like our biggest one. We've had like 900 people come to these things, which is pretty amazing for us in this little community.
Amazing.
And I'd be like, wow, my life is going to change now. I'm somebody now. And then you check your email and they're like, I can't believe you made that terrible joke. Like, what did you mean by that? And I'm like, you weren't even at the event. You're like mad or on behalf of someone else. So
yeah, I call that engagement.
Yeah. Well, I could use a little less engagement.
Whether you love me or you hate me, you engage with me.
Yeah. So that's the live event element of it. And so that's how we've done to try and build an audience. And I should say, I'm not trying to sell anything here because it's not for sale yet, but I actually wrote a book on how to start a podcast while I was on sabbatical. I'm trying to get a publisher for it, and it's been a slow process with our university has a publishing department. So it's not in print yet, but if any listeners are interested in starting a podcast modeled after kind of how I've done it with live events and radio program, I'd be happy to share with them the manuscript if that would be of any use. And I mean, whoops. It would be awesome. I'm not sure if this is going to come into the intro or not, but the New York Times thing is sort of what has made it feel like we've finally gotten there. Being highlighted in the New York Times at the beginning of 2021. So now I feel like you can be recognized if you just kind of stick to it. You know, we're in Fairbanks, Alaska. I don't think anyone gives a care about what happens up here. I think most of America forgets we exist 9 out of 10 days, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and the New York Times never called me to interview me. I had no idea that we were on their radar, but I felt like we had a good subject, and if we just stuck to it long enough, eventually something would work out. So I don't know if that's helpful to people, but if you believe in your, so it took us 6 years before we got that kind of recognition.
That spotlight.
Yeah. So I would say you can break out of the clutter. If I can do it all the way from Fairbanks, Alaska, you know, anybody can do it.
Rob Prince, man, it's such a pleasure having you on the show. You know, you're a phenomenal host, a phenomenal guy. You know, I'm going to have to come up to Alaska, pay you a visit.
When
you
want
to get
that.
Some of that warm weather, come holler at me in SoCal, baby. I'm right on Venice Beach.
I'm going to be down there as soon as I get my shots.
Holler at me.
All right.
Rob Prince, thank you so much, man. Pa bless you, my brother.
Thank you, Corey. Appreciate your time.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of OPP. And to our special guest, Robert Prince. Be sure to check out his amazing podcast, Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. This episode was mixed by Justin Richards. Music for this episode was produced by Richie Quake. And are you down with OPP? If so, check out OPP.news. For the latest in podcast news and releases, and while you're still listening, how about giving us a 5-star rating in the Apple app? It'll really mean a lot. Well, I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. God bless everybody. Till next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.